Spurs in full cry here. Let me
welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name is Windy, and I'm joined by my psychic and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Good evening, and welcome back, Windy.
Thank you. And our tactics guy and occasional host, Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Hello, mate. I'm not treading on your toes, am I?
A little. I mean, I left a lovely intro for you both to use, and you made the creative decision to leave that out.
To be fair, you made that after the first game, and then we recorded after the second game, and obviously, you know, the mood had changed, hadn't it? It was an entirely different situation.
It had, and my intro was also very weird, so I'm
glad that well, you, I wasn't going to bring that bit up.
Yeah, I'm glad that you did that. How did you find hosting?
Scary at first. I'm comfortable. Like, I've done another podcast, and obviously I've done little sections on here where I've been the host, but what I struggle with is like reading questions aloud. I'm a really bad reader out louder of written stuff. That was the scary bit.
It's definitely a different experience, isn't it?
Yeah.
I thought you did a great job, and I enjoyed very much what you both had to say.
Thank you, mate.
We're going to start off talking about Red Star, because I feel like there are some reasons for us all to be happy again. So Bardi, starting with you, how did you find the match?
I was really excited by the lineup. It was almost like Poch was making a statement. This is perhaps the beginning of a new era. This was his team. Lo Celso was starting. Sessegnon was on the bench. Yeah, there was a lot of reasons to be positive before the game started.
And how did you feel it went? I mean, we had a few rocky moments in the first half, would you say?
Yeah, I think by and large we were in control. I mean, their rocky moments came about not through much skill, more by chance. Like the chance where it ricocheted off Dyer and Foyth, and then it bounced through to them, and Gazzaniga, my new hero, made a fantastic save. And then there was a couple of other sloppy moments. But on the whole, I thought it was a really good performance at a ground which is apparently, well, is known to be a difficult place to go. And I don't think they'd lost them in the Champions League. I think there's a strange record anyway, which we've totally buried.
Yeah, their record at home is insane. And with that in mind, I thought they were absolutely dire. I couldn't believe how awful Red Star were. I do think there's an element of Spurs just completely having them at arm's length and playing very well, but Red Star were very, very poor in my opinion. And Nathan, how did you feel the game went?
It was needed, wasn't it? It was like, yeah, therapy. I've been putting forward the case that we had improved over the last couple of weeks, and then obviously the Everton game happened, which obviously we'll touch on in a second. Imagine if we'd played terribly and lost this game. I would have a very hard time fighting a case against you right now for Pochettino to remain at the club, wouldn't I? It was necessary. It was fun and everything as well. It was great to, you know, see our new toys, all three of them performing well together. It was what was needed.
I feel like Lo Celso almost couldn't have had a better first start. He was just immaculate, wasn't he? His style is so welcome right now. It's kind of took a while for the other players to get used to him. There were a couple of points early in the first half where he picked up the ball and he took some touches and he looked around and he was waiting for movement to happen around him so that he could quickly offload it and then move again. And no one moved for him. So he like ended up going back and looked kind of frustrated. Later in the game, he was getting the ball and people were used to the fact that he wanted to move it quickly and look for a return ball. So they were like running into space, and his presence had a knock-on effect on the rest of the team. I feel like him just being there revitalized things. Plus his pressing was genuinely really useful as well, and led to the first goal, I think. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. He reminded me, I said in the WhatsApp group, he reminds me of a handbag snatcher on a Vespa. He's constant.
That's so niche.
He's constantly on the move. He's constantly hunting for the ball. He's constantly hunting to win it back. And We speak a lot about Pochettino-type players, and he just seems to be it. I know it's Red Star, and I know there's caveats, but his energy and his drive, and you're right, he was getting the ball when he was looking for, he was always trying to make things happen. And those moments he did try and do something, his accuracy and his passing was great, and it's something that we dearly lacked against Everton away. It was a great start for him, and long may it continue.
Nathan made that video a while back on Eriksen where he kind of explains in layman's terms why what Eriksen does is simple and yet brilliant. And I feel like Lo Celso's very similar in that he doesn't try and overcomplicate things very often. He just plays kind of quickly and forward in a very simplistic way, but such a quick way that because he's allowed to do that by the fact that he's very technically able, he gets the ball under control really quickly. He's got great vision. He gets his head up. That allows him to play 1.5 seconds quicker than other players, which means that by the time he's played the pass, the defence isn't into position, the midfielders aren't expecting it, he catches players out, and it's great to see, and it's lovely that we have him. And let's just hope nothing goes wrong in terms of us signing him full-time, because he's a great fit for our squad. Also, Ndombele had a lovely game. Nathan, what did you make of his performance?
Oh, man, I'm so... Like, obviously, he took a few weeks to settle in, but yeah, he's here now, and we've got him, and he is everything that I promised he would be. Yeah, man, wow, what a player. I can't believe that other clubs let us get him. What an absolute star. Imagine how good he'll be when he's partnered up with an extremely good actual defensive midfielder.
And when we're just good again, generally. Yeah, I mean, he's standing out so much at the moment, partly because we're rubbish. But when we're good again, I still think he'll stand out because he is phenomenal. He can do a bit of everything. His through balls are ridiculous. Like, legitimately ridiculous. The audacious through balls doesn't quite cover it. He's playing stuff with the outside of his foot into minimal space, and he's getting it right, like, 50% of the time, which is a ridiculously high rate for those types of passes. He's just really, really talented. And again, like Lo Celso, he's moving the ball quickly. He's also coming for the ball constantly. He's showing for it. He's very brave in possession. He made a mistake yesterday where he played a pass too short for, I think, Eric Dier. And it didn't affect him one bit. He's got that confidence where he'll just go again and he'll try and do something similar again. The way he rolls players, due to his kind of excellent balance and spatial awareness, is just a joy to behold. He's very sort of Moussa Dembele in possession, when the ball's at his feet, but when he's looking for a pass, he's very Luka Modric, and that is a lovely combination.
What a shout.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's fouled off the pitch as well. Like, oh my God.
Oh, it's very exciting. Very, very exciting. The other player that really caught my eye was Juan Foyth, who obviously listeners will know I'm a huge fan of Foyth, so, you know, this might be slightly agenda driven, but he was really good. Bardi, how did you find Foyth's game?
It's not like you to drive an agenda, is it?
No, I like to keep my cards close to my chest, mate.
I thought Foyth was fine. He's not the most kind of penetrative fullback, but perhaps in this world we need a fullback who's not a walking disaster. So perhaps it's right. He is a little bit. He does remind me of Craig Dawson a little bit, you know.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
But obviously Craig Dawson, who's been to the tailors, got himself a nice suit and learnt a foreign language, he's been styled up a bit. He'll never be an amazing right back, but for now he's the right back we need, and perhaps the right back we deserve, and I got a lot of time for him. I like him. It was nice to see. Obviously, I would have preferred to have seen Kyle Walker-Peters play, because, you know, I just think he's young, he's English. But he did fine. He wasn't really tested. He was good on the ball, and he wasn't a disaster. So, yeah, it's good.
I have a noted agenda, which is don't play Foyth at right back. And I thought he was very good last night. Mm-hmm. You know, my main concern is over his athleticism. And I thought he had a decent display of that, albeit against a weak team last night. So I'm happy.
Yeah, I would like to see him start again at right back against Sheffield United.
Yeah.
I just don't think we're not learning anything from Aurier. And this has been part of my problem with Pochettino and his lack of introducing the new players and changing things. We haven't learned anything all season. Until now, we've learned that Lo Celso works, and we've finally learned that perhaps Sissoko is the best partner for Ndombele right now. And now we've learned that Foyth is a proper right back who's not a disaster.
Well, the main problem with Aurier is that he doesn't learn anything. He never learns from his mistakes. He keeps making the same mistakes now that he was making in his PSG career and in his early Spurs career. And it's very frustrating because he has attributes that are suited to being a Premier League right back.
Aurier is that guy that you played football with as a 16-year-old and you've gone away, you've gone to university, did whatever. You've come back to your hometown or local pub and he's now 28 and he's still in the same pub cracking the same jokes. Aurier is never changed. He's the same footballer he was as a child that he is now.
Nice analogy. I like that.
Thank you.
So I think Foyth long-term is definitely centre-back. At the moment, I'm just glad to see him in the team. So there is that. But I definitely want to see him move to centre-back before too long because I think his future is there. I genuinely think he could be our centre-back for the next X years. I think he's a really talented, competent player, and I'm all for him getting a lot of game time this season. Ollie Connors says, on a scale of 1 to 10, how uncomfortably damp did Ndombele and Son's link-up play make you feel last night? Nathan, let's start with you. What did you make of the link-up between Son and Tongi?
On a scale of 1 to 10, I would say I was a 7, which I would describe as swampy. lovely stuff. I don't know if that was a particular combination that especially caught my eye. I'll tell you what actually did interest me was Son staying wide and Danny Rose playing quite centrally a lot last night. That was interesting to see. We have seen that before. We do see that sometimes when Son plays on the left as well as Rose. But we saw a fairly extreme case of that last night, which was interesting tactically.
Mm. Buddy, how about you on the sliding scale?
Yeah, I'd be like Nathan, 7, 6.5, 7. I don't think that was the combination that really got me the most excited. I think it was more Ndombele and Lo Celso, and even occasionally Musa stepping in there and doing some bits. It was that trio that had me moist.
Oh, I liked it. I was an 8, which I described as talked up. So the idea of Son or Dele coming off the flank to run onto an Ndombele through ball is a very exciting prospect to me. And I think it kind of harks back to early Pochettino, where the idea was to get the ball vertically forward quickly, very quickly and early. And Ndombele brings that skill set, which is incredibly exciting. And I look forward to seeing a lot more of it. We better talk about Sessegnon because he had a really exciting cameo. Stan Paxton says, what do you see as Sess's role for the remainder of the season and also long term? So Bardi, he obviously got a few minutes last night, but he made an impact. He got an assist. He nearly got another couple of assists and he looked generally really good and very competent. What do you see happening next for Sessegnon, and how do you think he'll be integrated as the season goes on?
Definitely as I think he'll start getting more minutes as left back. I have to be really honest that I missed the last 5 or 6 minutes of the Tottenham game because Kyle Walker going in goal for Man City was too much of a pull. So I changed over to watch that. But he had a good start, and then he looks good. And he looks like when he gets in those areas, his reliability in finding his cross or pulling the ball back seems to be a bit more consistent than Rose's. But saying that, I didn't think Rose had the worst game. And I think Pochettino's got a little bit of a problem now because Davies has been playing well. Rose has done okay. Well, last night he did okay. And Sessegnon's coming through. So I don't know what he's going to do at the moment, to be honest.
Nathan, where do you think Sessegnon will play initially, and where do you think he'll play long term?
I do think long term, I do want to see him at left back. I think that Rose played fine last night, and I mentioned sort of the coming inside playing narrow kind of thing. But like regardless, Rose is on the way out long term, and Davies is good, no more, no less. So there is need for improvement at left back. I do think that is where that is the best possible version of Sessegnon's career, is to become a really high level left back. But I think in the meantime, we'll mostly see him coming off the bench to play an attacking role. I think that may well be the case for a few months, especially as we're out of the League Cup, which would have been a really good place for him to develop at left back.
It would. And also, whilst we're not so solid defensively, Davis seems like a better fit at left back just for the time being. But I really like the way that Sessegnon arrives in the final 30, times his movement well. He also uses the ball incredibly well, which is, it's always been a bit of a frustration of mine with Danny Rose, who seems to want to hit the touchline and thump the ball across goal as hard as he can. Sessegnon seemed very measured with his passing. He seemed to get his head up and pick people out rather than just putting the ball into an area. And I like that. I think There's a lot more to come from him. He's a player that I've liked for a long time, and I'm very excited we've got him. And it's been a bit frustrating that we've not seen more of him yet, but hopefully this is the start of plenty more appearances for him. Bardi, you want to talk about Dyer?
Yeah, I thought... I've been saying for a while that I think Dyer's finished as a top-level central midfielder. I just don't think he's got the athleticism. I don't think his range of passing or his touch is that good. So it was interesting to see him play at centre-back, which is where I think his future lies. And I thought he looked good alongside Davinson. He utilised the stuff he's learnt from being a centre midfielder. He came forward with the ball well. He was very he used it very well, and he seemed to sweep up quite nicely as well. So I think it was a promising move back to centre back, and I'm not against him whilst we kind of push out Alderweireld and Vertonghen. I'm not against seeing him play there again.
How about you, Nathan? Do you think this is a permanent switch back to centre half?
I don't know. The issue with Dyer is that his athleticism has gone. He's had a series of injuries and illnesses and time away from the pitch that has really like made him not just slow but like creaky and awkward. And like I feel like either he gets that back and he's good enough for us, you know, wherever, or he doesn't get that back and like, okay, maybe he can get away with being off the pace more at centre back, but that's not really something you want to run with, you know, long term. So for me, it's not really a question of position. It's about his ability to get match fit again.
Yeah, I'd go with that. I mean, I think I prefer Dyer in midfield personally, although I do take Bardi's point. He's had a couple of really rough seasons in midfield and he's been hugely injury hit. So I'm very, very happy for him to play some centre-back minutes to get his sharpness back. But
true.
Then once he gets those minutes back, I would like to see him given a go in midfield. And that's partly because...
We need a midfielder.
We need a midfielder. Like, I've not kind of thought through what I'm about to say, so bear with me. But
great. Wait, let me make notes.
But I still don't think Sissoko's a good central midfielder. I think Sissoko is not a problem at the moment. I think like he's playing okay. Like he's putting in 6-7 out of 10 performances and he's doing his best and that's kind of holding things together and it's fine. But if you just look at the numbers, if you look at what he does on the ball, I don't think it's enough defensively to compensate for the fact that Ndombele wants to be more attacking than defensive. I thought Winks started the season really well. He had a drop-off. He's now out of the team. Whether he'll come back, who knows. But in the meantime, Sissoko is very good at latching onto loose balls and charging forward with it. What he's not good at is winning the ball back or positioning himself somewhere to allow the team to win the ball back. And that is what I think Dyer is very good at and underrated at. He will position himself, will shuttle players into areas which allow teammates to win the ball, like collective pressing and getting the ball back. Soko, I just don't think it's come naturally to him. He's always been... when he's played midfield previously, he's been one of a three, and I think he gets away with a lot more as a three because he's very handy for transitioning from defence to attack. I don't think in a pivot he's good enough for a team with aspirations of being in the top six, let alone top four. I'd like Dyer to come back in, basically.
I've got a question. When Dyer's best season at Tottenham, when was it? When he played in the back three? Because
I think midfield of Dembele was his best.
15-16.
So, but that's a long time ago.
Yeah. Early Poch. It's basically when we got rid of Mason and Bentaleb and started playing Dyer and Dembele, and then Wanyama came in.
See, I don't think that we're ever going to see that Dyer again.
I hope you're wrong. I can definitely see the point, but we've made kind of final statements about players before and they've proven us wrong. And I think there is room to see whether it can happen. Like, he doesn't become a bad footballer overnight. And he had a really good season that year. It's a mental block and it's a physical block. And if he can overcome both of those, then we can get that Eric Dyer back home.
I just think that we can utilise the skills he does have from being a central midfielder and use them as a ball playing centre back. I just think that season where we finished second, he was playing more in a back three, and as because we had Wanyama and Dembele central, and I just think that was, for me, that was the best Dyer we had.
I think that's a really good point, and it's something that kind of gets overlooked when we talk about Alderweireld and Vertonghen moving out of the team. Obviously, we'll lose a lot defensively, but their ball progression is really, really good, and Dyer would add something in that respect. So I think that's a very valid comment. Should we talk a bit about Everton? I know we don't really want to because it was a fucking miserable display, but let's do it anyway. Bardi, general thoughts on the Everton game?
It was boring. Had it not been Tottenham, I would have turned it off, and That's you know it's bad when you get to that point with your own team. It had the potential to be pretty good but nothing was joined up. No one was able to link the play to anybody else. We were incapable of stringing passes together. And I think a large fault of that was upon Eriksen, who, as the kind of man who was there to work from the midfield and the strikers, bring them together, I think a lot of it fell down on him. And I think his sloppiness on the ball and his inability to find a quite mobile and quite intelligent moving front three was a big fault there.
I agree. Eriksen was a problem, and that's something that it's been a bit of an issue for a while, in that when Eriksen hasn't played well, Spurs haven't played well, and that's something that Pochettino kind of pushed his luck with for a bit, and his luck's run out. Nathan, what did you think sort of tactically in terms of our setup against Everton, and where do you think things went wrong?
I said before the game that Everton, because of the way they play, is going to be a real challenge. They defend in the medium block and they press with a high intensity and they just make the game a mess. And that's what we saw, like the most extreme case of. I tweeted at halftime that I was pleased with our intensity off the ball, and I got a lot of flack for that. I went back and watched the game afterwards, because the first time I watched it, I was trying to stream it on my phone and I was hungover and the stream kept breaking, and like the few bits I did see, the ball was out of play, you know, all that kind of stuff. But you know, we did have intensity of the ball. It's just that the match itself wasn't intense, because yeah, again, lots and lots of fouls, lots of time with the ball out of play, lots of breaking up the play in that kind of way, which made it awful to watch. Just a terrible display of football. But that's what Everton do. And in order to control the game against Everton and force them deep and wrestle possession away from them, you have to be really good, or you can try and play over the top. And I feel like we were confused about whether we wanted to try and wrestle control or if we wanted to play directly. I think we got caught between the two and succeeded in neither. Obviously, Eriksen's been playing very badly, and I'm not going to like pretend that isn't the case, but he never performs well in those games where we don't control the game. So it was never going to be one for him in that regard.
I thought, you know, Everton didn't create a great deal.
No.
That's a good thing. But that, for me, that was quite lucky in that Sanchez... In one sense, Sanchez kept Richarlison quiet, and in the other sense, he beat the shit out of him and got away with it every time. Like, there was one definite penalty on Richarlison.
No, you're so...
The trip in the corner of the penalty area. Like, that was so risky. I didn't know what he was doing. And then there was a couple of challenges that he made where I'm thinking, I'm surprised he's got away with that.
Windy, if you ever have children, please... Please never decide to referee a match, because you'll have other parents throwing stuff at you. That wasn't even close to being a penalty. I thought Richarlison was a mess. He was throwing himself around all the time.
He does throw himself around. I agree with that.
He was looking for it, and I think Sanchez was quite calm and handled him quite well. And I was quite happy with his physicality and everything else. He bullied Richarlison, and it's something that we say that he never really does that. So no, I thought there wasn't a penalty in there, and I thought I was very happy with Sanchez.
Despite having just 5 shots, and despite having just 2 shots on target, and despite having an XG of just 0.24, we were 1-0 up thanks to Dele's excellent finish, and we looked to be seeing the game out, I thought. And then Andre Gomez had a horrible accident. Nathan, what impact did that have on the game?
Well, I mean, it completely changed the game. It changed the momentum, it changed the mood. It felt like Everton scoring at least one was inevitable. We were on our way to, like, obviously a miserable performance and a miserable game, but probably a victory, and that was taken away from us. I don't want to like have Tottenham be the victim to that, because like obviously Everton have lost Gomez, and Gomez has fucking lost his ankle, so like obviously they've come off worse in that regard. But yeah, just a miserable event that threw everything off. I did want to add that, like, obviously Son's red has been rescinded, and rightfully so, but I also feel like I saw someone make the point, I think on Reddit, that like him being sent off probably did him a bit of a favour in the moment, because he was in tears, he was a mess, and he didn't want to be on the pitch for another 20 minutes, you know, trying to track back and defend and all of that kind of stuff, with the situation that he was in. So I think in a way, that sort of did him a favour.
And can you imagine how the crowd would have reacted to him had he stayed on as well? Yeah, I mean, the way the Everton fans have responded to him on social media has been absolutely appalling. Jesus. Not all Everton fans, of course, but a section of their fan base have been absolutely appalling towards Son. I mean, I know that Spurs fans can be just as bad as other fans. I'm aware of that. But this was some, like, it was so obviously an accident. Son, okay, so the argument goes that Andre Gomez elbowed Son in the face and Son was riled up from that and so wanted to do him some damage. I completely disagree with that. So Son was pissed off about being elbowed in the face, and rightfully so. You know, that should have been a yellow card in itself. It could have even been, you know, a red card retrospectively. He deliberately elbowed him in the face. But for me, if you watch the bit of play before Gomez had that horrendous accident, Son's chasing the ball down. He's going hard at Iwobi as well. And then he gets frustrated that he's not getting the ball and a guy's getting away from him. And he trips him by sliding into his back leg in the same way that you might pull someone's shirt back to stop the play. It happens every game. It's, you know, 99 times out of 100. 999 times out of 1,000, it's a harmless incident where someone's going to fall over and then get back up. And what happened was so unfortunate, and, you know, obviously Son is racked with guilt. He shouldn't be, but he is. And the way Everton responded to him, saying that it was some kind of vindictive act, that he's a spiteful player, that he's done this before, I just think they got it all wrong. And there's so much bias in there, and it upsets me. Bardi, have you got anything to add?
Completely agree with you, Windy.
Oh. So what you're saying is it's Serge Aurier's fault.
So the replays, I think this is a good thing that Sky stopped replaying the incident at a certain point, because that would have been horrendous if they had shown it. But it makes it really hard to tell what happened.
I'm pretty desensitized to that kind of stuff. I watch a lot of mixed martial arts. So if any of you listeners have the clip, send me it. I'll watch it. I don't care. I don't really believe it's Serge Aurier's fault, by the way. That was a joke, just in case anyone thought I was serious.
So I'm quite desensitized to that kind of thing as well. But on this occasion, I found it really difficult, and I found myself like almost tearing up. I know it sounds ridiculous and really over the top, but the other player's reaction to him.
Yeah, man.
I know that some of the Everton players were sort of trying to get Son sent off, et cetera, but I found it really comforting and heartwarming the way that, particularly Luca Dean ran straight to Andre Gomez to look after him and kind of cup his head in his hands. And Cenk Tosun as well. I thought kind of the Spurs players and Everton players handled the situation pretty well in what was a really difficult occasion. And, you know, there's no surprise to see Aurier get taken off, because he was right next to it happening, and it must have been a pretty horrendous thing to see happen on the pitch next.
Shout out to Seamus Coleman for heading to the dressing room afterwards.
That was great. So what was the story behind that, Nath?
Just that apparently Coleman, who I believe was acting captain for that game, or might be club captain anyway, led sort of like an entourage of Everton players into the dressing room sometime after the game to go and console Son and let him know that it wasn't his fault, which is a really, really sweet thing to do.
It really is. And he's suffered a similar injury himself.
He was out for like 2 years.
He had a rough time. So he knows kind of what Gomez is going through. Genuinely, thoughts are with Andre Gomez, and I hope he makes a full recovery. And it would be no surprise to me if he didn't, because that was a horrible injury.
Apparently the surgery has gone well.
So this weekend we move on to Sheffield United, who are a really interesting proposition tactically. Have you watched much of them, Nath?
Not a huge amount, and I'm going to be a dickhead and say the very interesting tactical thing about them is not that interesting and overblown, and everyone needs to calm down about it.
So you're talking about the outside centre backs making overlapping runs.
Yeah.
Okay. What? Why do you think that's overblown?
Because that's it. You've already explained the entire thing. Like, people make it out to be this really complicated, intriguing, unique thing, and like, it's not that unique, and it's not that complicated, and it's not that game changing.
That's fair. I personally think their central midfield is just as interesting, where they've got Oliver Norwood, who I think is ridiculously talented for a player that's been a journeyman for a lot of his career. He plays as the sort of the central pivot, and he's very good technically, so he kind of just gets the ball down and gets it moving. And then either side of him, he's got John Fleck, who was at Chelsea as a kid, is equally talented. And then on the other side, John Lundstrom, who was at Everton. And Lundstrom is chipping in with goals left, right and centre. He's making these kind of late runs from midfield to get into the box. And with their wing play and clever passing from Norwood and Fleck, it's coming up trumps for them. And Wilder's got a really nice, organised team set up there. And I feel as though if Spurs were good, when we were good, this was the kind of match where the fact that we were good would just trump any system. And we would probably steamroll them and win 2-1 or 3-1. And no one would think anything else about the tactical battle, regardless of how well Sheffield United played. But given that we're not good at the moment, I'm really concerned about this match. Bardi, do you think there's much hope for Spurs in this one?
I think we're going to pump them. I think this is the start of Tottenham. I think I don't know why, I'm just hoping now. I think we've turned the corner. And I think this will be a perfect game to kind of put that statement out there, that Sheffield United have been good, we've been bad, but now it's time to revert to the mean and we're going to be okay.
And Nathan, what system would you use going into this?
I would like to see the 4-2-3-1, both because of, like, we played well last night with the 4-2-3-1. It seems to be the way that we're trending. And I do also think, specifically with the overlapping centre-backs, if you're doubled up out wide and they triple up, you just don't worry about the centre-back. Like, what's he going to do? Cross it in. Oh my God. I'm hearing this bit of being played over a gif of the goal now. But I maintain the important thing to do is to not, like, get over scared and flustered by there being a triple up out wide and just let the widest player cross the ball.
And their player Muset was the first player to score, first player to get a hat trick of assists in one half in the first half since who? Who's the last player to have done that?
Walker Peters,
well done, Wendy.
I will never forget that day. The greatest day of my goddamn life.
Yeah.
Steve Jennings says, I've made a potch out banner for when Ndombele and Lo Celso inevitably don't start on Saturday, but I can't make it to the game. Which one of you should I post it to?
Send it to me. I'm taking my wife for her first visit to New White Hart Lane. So if they do start, then I'm just going to stay in Beavertown. She can watch the game. I'll just stay in Beavertown.
If they're not playing, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. And what do you think the chances are of them not playing?
Very unlikely. I think he's found his common sense again.
But we said that after the last Red Star game.
We did, but that we had Liverpool after that, and
Nathan, you're less than convinced.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't be shocked if, like, I would expect Ndombele to start, but I think it might take a little while before Lo Celso starting league games. And I know. I would like to see him start them soon, and it makes sense, and he played well, and we want to essentially replace Eriksen sooner rather than later because of the way that he's performing. And I believe that Poch feels the same way about those things. He's just very patient with these things and takes his time to bring players through. You know, he took months to bring Kane through. And all of the other examples, you know, he likes to not rush these things. And I know that it's, like, it's really frustrating, and I know that things are especially frustrating now, but just don't be shocked if Lo Celso doesn't start the weekend.
So you mentioned Eriksen there, and Jack Law, who is Custard Creams on Twitter, which is an excellent handle and an excellent biscuit, he says, on a scale of 1 to 10, what level of rage will you feel if you see Eriksen in the starting 11 for Saturday? You're expecting him to play, Nathan, but will you be cross if he plays?
There'll be some annoyance. I'll be coming in at a warm 4 on the annoyance scale.
And Bardi will be throwing his wife at Pochettino.
Yeah. Who was quite surprised by Gazzaniga yesterday. He knocked her off her feet.
Really? It's those eyes.
Yeah, she's a fan of Argentinian men in general anyway. So she looked at Lo Celso and she went, ooh, who's that? He's new. And then she saw Gazzaniga and she stopped what she was doing. And it's weird because had I reacted like that to a lady on TV, I would have got hit.
He is ludicrously handsome. I did wonder whether, you know, the save he made with his feet down low, which was excellent, by the way, against Red Star. I did wonder if the striker missed that because he was too busy staring at Gazzaniga's beautiful face.
Gazzaniga is impressing me more each week. I still think he's a little bit slow to come off his line and come sweep the ball up and collect it. But I have to say, week on week, he's growing on me.
That could be a confidence thing, though, couldn't it? It's something that he could add to his game later.
Yeah, perhaps. There was a few times where Davinson and Dyer had the ball in the area and they were kind of waiting for him to come and just get it. But he
I noticed that too, yeah. Mm. And Dyer actually did the right thing and just dealt with the ball, which is good. That's kind of what you want to see.
Yeah.
Someone take control in that situation. But yeah, Gazzaniga is really good with his feet and he has made some excellent saves. So I'm very, very pleasantly surprised so far by what he's done.
Especially because Lloris is now gone until January for sure.
Right, he's had to have surgery, right?
Yeah.
It's not good for Lloris. I think his recovery will take a long, long time. I'm intrigued just to see whether we sign a new goalkeeper in January. So Eddingson, who is Eddingson10 on Twitter, he says, why did we give Lucas a new contract? Can we genuinely use him for anything else other than a backup to Son? I've been a bit harsh on Lucas on Twitter recently. Nathan, what do you make of him and what do you see as a sort of long-term proposition with Lucas?
Yeah, a backup to Son and plays as a backup to Kane a lot as well. I don't know. He's good, but I'm not excited about him. I did think the contract was weird and came at a weird time. Mm. I don't know. He's essentially a squad player who will have moments of form. I don't know. I mean, those are players worth having, obviously.
Is that going to be enough for him, though?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
But you think he's just kind of accepted now that he is a squad player, a top four Premier League team, and that's it, and nothing more?
I would imagine that he is happy with like the instructions and roles and squad situation that he's given, and he can really only blame's not the right word, but understands that he himself is responsible for the starts that he's given, basically.
He's 27 now. I don't know. I'm not a big Lucas fan. I don't like him when he plays up front. I prefer him on the wing. I like how tenacious he is. I like the fact that he's really good in the air. But for me, he's not someone who gels well with other players. Most of his good moments have come when he's done something by himself. And I don't think that stands you in good stead for the future. Eddingson also says, RIP Kyle Walker-Peters. You mentioned him earlier, Bardi. What do you think he's done to Pochettino to mean this situation has occurred?
There's very various different theories that have been spouted on the fighting cock, probably which shouldn't be mentioned here. But I don't know. I don't know.
It is absolutely baffling. Nathan, what have you made of this?
I don't know. I don't get it. Like, he must just be like terrible in training. I don't understand because he's stuck around. And obviously, Pochettino must be saying like, you're definitely one for the future. You're definitely going to get game time. This season is definitely going to be the season for you. I'm definitely going to start you next season. Sign a new contract, commit, and then you get like one game and you didn't like light everything up and now I'm playing a lunatic and a centre-back ahead of you. I don't know. I don't get it. Just run, Kyle. Run for the hills, mate.
It's like a Truman Show style test to see how long the player will stay at a club without actually getting any games. I'm sure there's probably been... Wasn't there like a famous goalkeeper who was at a Premier League club for 10 years but played like 5 games or something? Which is right for Man City, barely played.
Yeah.
Is that the one you're thinking of?
Yeah, that is what I was thinking of.
Arsenal and then Man City. Yeah, that's a good shout. Steve Harper, yeah. Played very late in his career. Yeah, so Kyle Walker-Peters will make a breakthrough at like 29.
Yeah, we're going to have 31-year-old Kyle. This is the season for him. He's coming good. He's maturing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's weird.
It's so weird.
Keith Weichel says, are we seeing the future of our midfield as a three with Sissoko and Ndombele and Lo Celso, or more of a pivot with Sissoko and Ndombele and Lo Celso in the attacking band? So Lo Celso played from the right against Red Star, Bardi, but where do you see him playing going forward?
I don't know. I think he's got the qualities to play more central. His strength, the way he moves, he's quick. I think he's going to be wasted out wide. I would like to see him play more central. And from the highlights of him, all the best bits happen when he's kind of in more of a central area. And maybe there's a way that we can play Ndombele, Lo Celso, and then a proper defensive midfielder as a three, perhaps.
And that's what you had in mind as well, Nathan, I remember at the start of the year.
At the start of the year, and maybe things have changed. I think we'll see lots of both. When he played wide right yesterday, he did the sort of Eriksen thing of like, yes, starting wide right, but spending a lot of time central, a lot of time deep and all that sort of stuff. So we'll see a mix of the lot. I think at the moment we want to continue with the 4-2-3-1, but I wouldn't be surprised if we also play a lot of three-man midfields in that time, and Lo Celso is involved centrally in those occasions.
it's nice to have that versatility in the squad.
Yeah.
Charlie Coop says, what should be our first choice defence for the rest of the season? Foyth looked good at right back. Dyer had a good has made a good bid for being a centre back, but surely you have to start Toby and Davinson. Bardi, you've kind of pinned your colours to the wall on this already, but what do you think?
Yeah, I think Foyth at right back, and then a combination of Dyer, Davinson and Toby at centre back, and then I guess Davies at Sessegnon with perhaps a little bit of Rose. I said at the beginning of the season and later on as well that I want to see a progression of Tottenham. If we are going to go through a sticky phase, I'd rather go through a sticky phase trying something new than with the same old heads.
And we know that the idea for the start of the season, because they tried to sell Aurier, was to start with Foyth at right back. Do you think that will continue, Nathan?
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Again, like I was saying earlier with Lascelles, so like these ideas may take time, and there's also like the rotation element. Like if you've played 90 minutes midweek, you're not necessarily fit to play 90 minutes at the weekend. But I think we should, at the moment, based on performances, see Foyth slowly take over Aurier at right back. By the way, I just want to add that I'm literally fine with Vertonghen and Alderweireld. I have no issues with either of them, really. Vertonghen's getting a little slow, but like I think they've both been fine.
I don't think Vertonghen's looked good this year.
No.
I think Alderweireld's largely looked okay, given it's difficult to judge him because previously he was playing in a team where he wasn't tested that much. And so, of course, strikers are getting beyond him more because there's more opportunity for them to do so. But I think he's been okay-ish, and I've got no problem with him continuing. I think Foyth learning alongside Alderweireld is that's my dream scenario, to be honest. But Sanchez is getting better, so that's a good thing. Brian Schaffner says, how many points off the top four do we need to be by January the 1st for you to feel reasonably confident we can grab a Champions League spot? And to be honest, I feel like that's a very kind of optimistic worldview, that we can still be in the running for the top four at the moment, given the start we've made to the season. Nathan, do you think it's feasible that we can secure Champions League football again?
Yes.
You do?
I do. We know what we're like when we are good. And I do believe we're heading in that direction. And I also think that United and Arsenal are bad and Chelsea aren't as good as they appear.
I think Chelsea are good and I think Leicester are excellent.
Leicester's a good shout. That's fair. But I still think that like not that we're playing brilliantly, obviously, but I maintain that there's a space there for the taking if we can, you know, stand up to it.
How about you, Bardi? Do you still have sort of... Do you think that the top four expectation is realistic at this point?
Yeah, but we need to start winning from Saturday. We can't keep letting... it's 10 points now. It's a long way. We can't let it get any further. Leicester have the advantage of no European football, but they are... I think pretty much they're one or two injuries away from crumbling. A lot of their hopes is based on Maddison, based on Vardy, and then their Turkish chap at centre back. Chelsea can be got at. They've had quite a good run of games, and to credit to them, they've taken advantage of those games. But I think for us, we really need to start winning now.
Yeah, I'm personally a little less optimistic about Champions League football, but I'm happy that you have kind of made me feel a bit better about it. Let's end the podcast with this one, because I think there's a potential to end on a positive note. So Nelson and Saha says, does the emergence of the new signings making their way into matchday squads ignite our season? Are the older players on notice now? And we've spoken about this a bit already, but Bardi, do you feel like this is the turning point?
Yeah, I've said it a couple of times. Yep, turning point. It's here. We're going to start winning games.
And how about you, Nath?
Yes, but it might not be instant. It might take a few weeks, you know, for these players to, you know, be nailing 90 minutes every weekend.
I mean, what the worst thing that could happen is Lo Celso and all these guys start this week. We smash Sheffield United, then they all go get injured on international duty and we revert back to time.
But your imagination is very limited if you think that's the worst thing that can happen.
True.
So I think that until we work out what's happening in central midfield, I don't think we're going to suddenly become good again. And I think that will involve a painful rebuild with Moussa Sissoko coming out of the team. Who comes in for him, I don't know. Maybe when Lo Celso and Ndombele are properly match fit and we've got some confidence back in the team, then I think perhaps we could play Winks at the base as a sort of progressive possession player. I don't know. I think Dyer is probably a more realistic long-term aim for the rest of the season. But I worry that for the moment we don't have enough protection of our defence, and with the kind of nerves around us, I feel that if we concede one, we'll concede more, and that's what concerns me. But I'm absolutely thrilled that the Celso looks so good, and I'm thrilled that Sessegnon looks so good as well, because you have a player like Sessegnon who can come off the bench and genuinely make a difference. That must give the team a whole load of extra confidence. And I feel like he can actually, as much as Lo Celso had an impact on the team's mentality, I feel like having a player like Sessegnon there in reserve can have a similar impact too. And hopefully we can just grind out some wins during this rough patch and then push on from there with our hot young things. You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Bardi for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindner for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at Davey Shambles and his SoundCloud, D. Lindner. Do check him out. He's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.